Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, family, and welcome to the Us Lifting Us Thursday night call. And we are here to have a sober discussion about the economic and political plight of black people and the global cooperative economic model that provides an exact method of gaining economic and political self-determination. And we are building the global machinery of our economic freedom and sovereignty and the methodology to pass it to future generations. And we got another very interesting topic that we want you to join the conversation. And as soon as we finish up this music, we'll be right back to get started. All right, family, once again, we thank you so much for joining us on the call tonight. And we're here every Thursday from 9 p.m. until 10 p.m. And we always have very interesting conversations and topics that's all connected to the mission of Us Lifting Us, which is advancing the cooperative economics model. And we have Us Lifting Us members across the country and around the world, and we have listeners around the world. And we want you to join the conversation. Of course, if you're on the telephone, you're right here with us already at 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. And once we get started, if you've got questions or comments, you just press the number 1 on your telephone keypad to join the conversation with your question and comment. And also, we can be heard by internet radio, and you go to www.usliftingus.com. That's usliftingus.com. And when you get to the home page, you just look for Ulu Radio and you click on that. And then when it you see the icon that says Listen Live, you click on that, and you will be able to hear the broadcast by internet radio. And tonight we have a very good topic, Pan-Africanism in a Time of Delineation. And this is another opportunity for us to learn from each other and to have a conversation and to expand our awareness and increase our clarity. I'm Brother Thurman, and I'm Us Lifting Us member. And on the line, we have two special guests. We have Brother Lamar, and he's going to provide a whole lot of insight about this topic tonight, Pan-Africanism in a Time of Delineation, and help us to definitely to understand the subject of delineation and what that is all about. And also, Brother Shabaka, who is a Us Lifting Us member, also joining the conversation. And Brother Lamar, we welcome you to the call and give the families your greetings.
Yes, yes, greeting, Brother Thurman. Greetings, Brother Shabaka. Greetings, family. Ulu Universe and the Black Nation, all the Black world, whoever's within earshot of this broadcast. Thanks for having me this evening, and I look forward to hearing from you all, the host, and anybody who takes the notion to join us. Thanks for having me.
And thank you, brother. And Brother Shabaka?
Yeah, thank you, Brother Thurman, and greetings to you, Brother Lamar, and family. I appreciate the invitation and look forward to our discussion.
Good, good. And so again, once again, family and the listening audience, the topic is Pan-Africanism in a Time of Delineation. And so we're going to go to Brother Lamar, and Brother Lamar, help us, because we know that there are family members, they're not at all familiar with that word. So tell us, give us a definition of delineation.
Yes, sir. I'll be more than happy to. Delineation. I want you to think of lineage when you think of the word delineation. And lineage implies your line, where you come from, whether it's nation, tribe, clan, ethnicity, all the delineation falls within all of that, but delineation is more specific. And so there's a movement afoot that's been going on for about 3 to 4 years, pushing reparations for American descendants of slaves or descendants of American slaves or descendants of American chattel slavery, take on various names and acronyms. And, of course, in the focus of that movement is to delineate Black Americans whose ancestors were brought over here on slave ships and built America, built the wealth of the country with their bodies. And of course, in everything else that they, in everything else modest and meager that they had, and built this into the wealthiest country in the world, but were never compensated, remunerated, or made whole, and in many cases were made bottom cast. And so we are going after the United States to fulfill the promise that was made in Special Field Order 15, 48% of Mule, and basically to give us the reparations. And Our claim for reparations is specific. It's aimed specifically at the American government, and is specific to those who are descendants of American slavery. And the delineation part is we, for years, we've been called Black, African American, and we never felt like those terms adequately addressed our lineage. Our lineage is based on people that were enslaved here in the United States, and people who whose bones are buried here, and people, you know, great grandfathers that we've never seen, but only heard of through through records and albeit. So the delineation, just like other groups can be delineated that come here, even black groups that are from the diaspora, of course, are identified not just by being black, but they're identified specifically based on their country, and in many cases, their tribe, and at worst, their, like I said, their country, whether it's Nigerian-American, Jamaican-American, Kenyan-American, and even within America, groups, Brother Shabak was talking last night, Gullah Geechee, but black Americans have always just been kind of part of this larger group and never been specified. And for this justice claim that we're going after, specificity is necessary. And plus, specificity is an idea, and delineation is an idea whose time has come, because oftentimes, you know, other people may get lumped into black Americans, but of course, many of those other groups don't necessarily share the same culture and lived experience in America that we have. So it's important for economic purposes, political purposes, social and cultural purposes that we identify ourselves and we give ourselves the dignity of delineation in having ourselves identified properly, whether it's American descendants of slaves, freedmen, whatever the case may be. But the delineation that we're aiming for is the delineation that ties us back to our ancestors that were slaves here in America.
Okay, thank you. And as you were talking, you mentioned names such as Africans and black, and you used the word specificity. Is there a name in terms of pursuing the reparations, and a name that we would be identified by? What name?
The overwhelming majority, and the name that we're using for the most part is American descendants of slaves. And so, okay. Yeah, that would be that would be the ADOS. Or some derivation of that name, descendants of American slavery, but something that identifies the country of America, because we're anchored in America, and the fact that we are not just a black person from anywhere. We are, you know, from America, and we descend specifically from our lineage is the slaves that were brought here to work and to build this country.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Brother, go ahead. I'm sorry, brother. Go ahead. You had another follow-up question.
Jump right on in, Brother Shabaka. Go right ahead.
No, I was trying to get a little clarity now. You know, there are many people from Europe who identify themselves based on their family ancestry stemming beyond just the slave period, you know, like French, British, German, in fact, some of the settlers, so-called, from Europe, you know, Germans and people from Great Britain were probably the first in this country. And then, of course, when you go to Florida and parts of the Caribbean, Central America, and of course, earlier than that were the Spaniards. And so the people will acknowledge themselves based on where they were, because this country at one time were inhabited by a majority of folks who consider themselves or what are now called Native Americans. And in fact, there were in the central and southern hemisphere, there were some Africans that had left Africa before Columbus. In fact, hundreds of years before Columbus, that's also settled. So I'm wondering why you're focusing that Africans or black people as just originating out of slavery, when obviously the mere fact that they were enslaved indicate that they came from some other place. Could you help me out with that?
Yes, and thanks for that. And that's the very point that the name indicates. And that's something that even mentioned to you, you know, when we spoke last night. Slaves, I indicate that we were brought here from Africa. So we acknowledge that connection. However, when we came here, we basically became a different people, you know, based on the conditions that we were put through. We amalgamated with some of the natives that were already here, the white slave owners, and, of course, in our experience here over the last 500 years, have created a different people with a different lived experience. And you mentioned the Europeans, and I'm glad that you mentioned that because it really drives home a bigger point of empowerment. We're led to believe that blacks, that we're the minority in this country, right? Even if we identify ourselves as blacks and if we include all the other blacks with us, we're below the Latinos now, or people who identify as Hispanic if we use the term black. But if everybody were to delineate, if we were to properly delineate, the number one group, the most populated group in the United States would be German Americans. And guess who would be second behind German Americans? You got it, descendants of American slaves. And then everybody else would fall under there. So if we were to delineate, we would properly be identified and counted and given the due as far as our strength in numbers as it should be. So, but yes, we do. That's why, you know, descending from slaves, unlike there's some groups who, some groups of blacks who are also delineating by calling themselves indigenous and connecting their lineage to those Native Americans. But of course, we're not that group. We acknowledge our connection to Africa because, of course, there were some black Native Americans or some copper-colored or melanated Native Americans who some people are acknowledging is their lineage. And, of course, and we acknowledge that there probably were some, but according to our data and research and information, there it was a small number. And even though they may have been melanated, but they're not the most of us that are black that are here in America. We acknowledge that we came from, you know, West Africa via the slave trade. And that's our lineage, and we're here in America, and we built this country, and that country just never made us whole, and so we're delineating to be specific in our justice claim again.
Yeah, how do you determine that we're the second largest group, you know, next to the German Americans? How do you calculate that, and what is that based on?
It's simple, just population checks. If you delineate, I don't know if you heard me clearly, but if you delineate, if you break down white people according to how they identify as far as their lineage, German Americans, Irish Americans, Italian Americans, Japanese Americans, the largest group is there. I mean, it's easy. It's Googleable as far as population. The largest group are German Americans. If you break down whiteness by lineage, now if you – of course, you know, whiteness, they categorize themselves all together. They're not delineated. But if you break the population down by lineage groups, German Americans are the largest group in these United States of America. And then, of course, the second largest group based on lineage would be American descendants of slaves.
Okay, but I think I got where you're going with that, and that is that if they divided themselves up based on their ancestry,
sure.
Or lineage, well, all right. Now,
yeah.
But they don't do that. They group themselves as white. Okay,
right,
and it's
right.
About 160 to 200 million of them as they classify themselves. All right, so when they group themselves as one, all right. They are allowed to dominate. Now, they might have internal issues based on the lineage differentiation that you just explained. But when they group themselves, and I think that a good example of that is just what recently happened when you take the COVID-19 plan or pandemic, depending on which side of the argument that you're on, it's obvious that the coordination globally is the working together of these various European entities who now see themselves as one in terms of attempting to exert a domination over the globe. So they're not going to necessarily break themselves down. You know, just I'm French-American, I'm German-American, I'm Italian-American. They're going to see themselves as white. Okay.
Yeah.
And so with that understanding and with that showing, going back, you know, at least a century, how does us classing ourselves, if we happen to be the second, all right, but we're not the second when they classify themselves as one, which is white, what, how does the argument pursue to acquire the reparation as you define it, you know, based on the contributions, not the contributions, the work that we have done as a group of people in building this country?
Yes. Well, and I just use that example just to make the point about delineation because, you know, facts are facts. Of course, you know, whites are the group, this the majority that's in power here in the United States. And, of course, and it's been, you know, they worked it to their advantage. White supremacy is, you know, not only, I mean, we acknowledge that it's global and of course, and it's worked well for them. But here in the United States, the reason for the delineation is specificity. When you have a court case, you know, you want to make sure that you've got the right victim that's been injured. And, of course, in here in the United States, that's the American, when it comes to slavery and reparations, that was strictly the descendants of American slaves here in the United States. I'm not talking about anywhere else. I'm talking about strictly in the United States. And that's who we're not making this claim against the world or against Britain. We're making this claim against these here United States of America that was established legally as a sovereign country in 1776. And so that's where our claim is to, and of course, and we've got the data. Great book that I want to refer to you all to get the best context that you're going to get on this is an award-winning book by distinguished scholar from Duke University, also MIT black scholar, Dr. William Sandy Darity. The book is called From Here to Equality. That book lays out all of the data, all of the research, crunches the numbers, shows the systemic oppression, because what's driving blacks here in America, we are at risk, or we are on the brink of extinction, basically. We're definitely at risk of erasure, and many of us even think replacement. So it seems to be erase and replace at risk. So and the reparations is necessary because we have a huge racial wealth gap in this country that's been going on for a long time, and it's not closing, it's widening. And the book From Here to Equality lays that out. And so reparations is necessary to resolve an existential threat. And so the delineation makes sure that those with the harm here in America are the ones that are rewarded. Because what's been happening is that the politicians have been using the resources and the redress and the restitution that was intended for us, and is using it for a lot of other groups, you know, handing them out like candy to other groups to try to build their political power base at our expense, while never making the group that was harmed the most and that's been bottom cast whole. So that's my answer there.
Yeah, I'll ask this one last question, and I'm sure Brother Thurman and probably the family might have some questions too. But now, how does that, you know, from an early conversation, you know, I said that, you know, when I looked at my ancestry, you know, from the Caribbean through Florida up to the Gullah Geechee area. All right. Now, remember now that the United States did not have Florida, and they only got Florida, which was also had slaves, so-called enslaved people from the Caribbean and Africa by the Spanish-American War, Spanish loss. Florida was annexed. The Louisiana Purchase, all right? Napoleon was broke, you know, trying to fight Haiti, all right? So he had to sell the Louisiana Purchase, of which he had also all right, people from the Caribbean and Africa that he enslaved. All right, so now how does that context fit into your delineation?
Yeah, quite frankly, it doesn't. You're talking about those territories were pre-1976 for the most part. The United States was established as a government, as a country in 1976. And, of course, like, as you mentioned, Florida was a colony of Spain. Louisiana was a colony of France. But once they became part of the United States, of course, anybody who's, post 1976 up to Jim Crow, well, up to the Civil War, and of course, those are the people that were, if they were harmed, if they were here after 1776 as a United States citizen, a slave, or mainly a slave, because that's the context that we're coming from now, descendants of slaves, they're part of the group if they can trace their lineage back to, to slavery. Now, other groups may have a claim, but that's a separate claim. May have a separate claim against the United States. We encourage that, but this is a specific claim from a specific group of people that this movement represents, and we're delineating to make that clear. As far as lineage, as far as, I have some people, but my lived experience has been through my lineage as a descendant of American slaves, the accrued disadvantage baked into the system that we've had to endure, from slavery to Jim Crow to redlining and mass incarceration and just that whole accrued disadvantage. But the chattel slavery was the worst part, and then of course all of the other systemic oppressions that were meted out along the way that has made us an economic bottom cast. And of course, and we live in a capitalist system, and for a capitalist system to work, you got to have a bottom cast. And America decided a long time ago that it was going to be, all the way back to Bacon's Rebellion before the forming of the country. They decided that blacks were going to be that bottom cast. You got bottom cast groups in other countries like India, who ironically just happen to be darker melanated people. And so, we're made a bottom cast because we're wealthless and we're powerless. And making us whole will change our material situation and will give us a part of the franchise of the country that we worked and built and that we deserve. So our focus is, it's on our claim and our political interest. And no anybody else. That's up to them to do the work to make their claim. We welcome it. CARICOM, which is a group of 13 to 15, I forget the exact number, of Caribbean islands, they're pushing a reparations claim against the British. Namibia has got a reparations claim against Germany, and I think if they haven't already settled, they're in the process of settling. The Aboriginals of Australia, they've been given reparations from their from their government. And even here in the United States, a lot of states are starting to do work around reparations. But of course, make no mistake about it. The reparations, the real reparations that we're seeking is from the United States government, not from these states. The only thing that the states can do from our perspective is doing whatever the states do. We see that as supplemental, but we want states to really support the United States, make and do in repairing its American, its black descendants of American slave citizens who come from the lineage of chattel slavery.
Brother Thurman,
thank you all, brother.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I just want to take the time to say to the listening family, hopefully you're taking notes because this is a very valuable conversation to have clarity about what's being said here. Once again, the topic is Pan-Africanism in a Time of Delineation. And you can call in and with your questions or comments to 929-477-2789, and press the number 1 on your telephone keypad. And Brother Lamar, ADOS group making the reparations claim, is there a timeline? You mentioned it would include those that can trace their lineage back into slavery in terms of their family line. Is there a cutoff coming forward? I mean, is it into the 70s or 80s or what? Is there a timeline?
Well, and let me make a clear distinction. When we say ADOS, there's an official group that's called ADOS HQ Headquarters and Advocacy Foundation. One of the co-founders of ADOS is from Atlanta, gentle lady by the name of Yvette Carnell, and of course Antonio Moore is the other half of that duo. He's a lawyer out of California. But ADOS is a lineage as well. The lineage is leaderless. It's a movement that's supporting the lineage-based reparations. It's not an official organization, but what the movement is pushing for, and what the original, before there was a, I guess, a kind of separation in some the factions that led to. HQ group kind of going the route of being their own 501c3 and 501c4. We're all pushing for, we support, there's this H.R. 40 bill that's before Congress. We supported it in principle, but we got some problems with it. We think it needs some edits. We want the specificity in that language. And so what we're pushing is to get people on the commission that will champion that, because we feel like without that specificity, it's a total disservice and a slap in the face and a grift, to be quite honest, to people that didn't descend from American slavery, and of course it would be a terrible misjustice for those people that are still standing in the shoes of those people that are no longer there. So the time frame, time frame is as soon as possible. We're trying to get this done legislatively, and we're using political pressure to the point that we can, because another paradigm shift that's come out of the ADOS movement is weaponizing our political power and our vote. We are prepared to our vote is for sale. We have no loyalties to any party anymore. We're not like our grandparents in the church crowd that we grew up under that just voted blue no matter who, the lesser of two evils. at best, we're voting down ballot, which means, if the president or the top of the ticket isn't supporting a black agenda, we'll go down and vote for mayors and local initiatives that affect our lives and our local communities. And at worst, if none of them, have a black agenda, then what are we getting for our vote? We have come to the understanding that politics is not a gift, it's an exchange. Politicians don't respond to applause, they respond to pressure. And if the system isn't working for us, why participate in it to the fervor and the enthusiasm and the punctuality and the level of support that we've been participating in it, with it here in the last several decades since the civil rights movement. So those are some new paradigms that's also coming out of this movement that we feel is going to push us to real empowerment.
Okay. I'm trying to look at that real empowerment, and I'm not trying to be facetious. I'm trying to look at it because if you take the 40 million of us, that group, the 40 million of us, and like I said, whites do not splinter in terms of their addressing us. They might splinter among themselves in their internal struggle. When it comes to us, they do not splinter. So I'm trying to look at a process of a realization what is the strategy in order to get a majority population that do not splinter. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And then address that. And the other question I gotta run on you, because I'm still trying to get this definition of who would qualify as a person,
sure,
response.
It's coming.
My grandparents came from the Caribbean. They suffered. They were enslaved in the Caribbean. All right, but they suffered Jim Crow as a consequence. They didn't suffer slavery. They suffered Jim Crow. So are they included in some aspect of your reparation, or are they just excluded because is not associated with the enslavement of black people
in
the U.S.?
I get your question. I've got an answer for it. Thanks for that. And first of all, before I answer that question, I just want to clear up the comment of splinter. It's not splintering at all. That 40 million that you mentioned, 36 million of us are black Americans. 4 million are immigrants. That's from, the Caribbean, African, or somewhere else in the diaspora. So the majority of us are American descendants. The majority of blacks here are American descendants of slaves. So it's not splintering. It's just, like I said, delineating and making sure, just for this justice claim. But that does feed into your second question, because the entire
splintering of blacks. I meant that there's no splintering of the whites.
Yeah. Well, we're not concerned about
us.
The whites. Yeah. Yeah. We're not. We're. This is our justice claim. Yeah. We're not trying to. We're not framing ourselves and as according to the way
you got to go to their court system.
Yeah. Yeah. But of course, this is our country. We got black representation too. But that'll take care of itself, win, lose, or draw. But to your second question, who qualifies? The agenda of the black agenda includes everyone that lives here that's black in the United States, whether you're from no matter where you're from. If you were here, if you weren't here in slavery. But because the truth is, most black immigrants were to the right of the decimal point before the 1965 Immigration Act, which was inspired by the 64 Civil Rights Act and such and such. And it was during the 80s, during the Reagan administration, when immigrants really started to come over here, and black immigrants started to come over here in droves. So if you were affected by Jim Crow, redlining, mass incarceration. Yeah, that whole black agenda does include you. It's just a slavery piece that we consider sacred, and it's exclusive for mm-hmm. those that are American descendants of slavery. Because here's mm-hmm. the truth. The CARICOM reparations claim, we're not included there, and we don't want to be included there. That's not my lived experience. My lived experience is here.
Yeah,
in the United States.
We don't live in the Caribbean.
Right. Well, some black Americans do. And even if I moved over there tomorrow and lived there, I wouldn't want it because I'm not entitled to it. At least that's the way I feel. My reparations claim is here in the United States. So I wouldn't get mine and try to go over there and double dip and get that's a grift, and we're not supporting anything akin to grifting. But like I said, mm-hmm. those countries, they have scholars, they may have a claim. Our scholars did the work. Years, decades of grinding the numbers, grinding the data, making the case, making the claim, especially a lot of those countries as brilliant as they proclaim to be, they can use that blueprint. Some of those countries are, like I mentioned, Namibia should be getting theirs from Germany. The aboriginals mm-hmm. in Australia has already gotten theirs. So those are separate claims against whoever their colonial masters or whoever they need reparations from. And so, but here we're trying to get ours that was promised to us and was almost delivered until they killed the president and reneged on it. Special Field Order 15-48 CMU, that was a promise, and that was an attempt to make it right. But of course, it never happened. So we're still holding America accountable for that. And so so that's my answer there. The entire black agenda is inclusive of all black American citizens who are here in the United States, but the reparations portion of that black agenda is reserved exclusively for those who are descendants of American slaves, and rightly so. I don't think anybody, any right thinking people have any problem with that.
How do you see the Pan-African aspect? How do you see the Pan-African aspect?
Well, here's the thing. The role that in a lot of these conversations, Pan-Africanism is really being reevaluated and pretty much scrutinized as to its past and present role in this whole in our current fight of delineation, and of course for the reparations. One of the leading opponents of this push happens to be a Pan-Africanist group. It's a group that probably many of you all maybe I'm sure are familiar with and associated with, and they were one of the, as a youngster, they were one of the groups, they were the group that I learned about the reparations claim from. That's the Incobras and NARCs, those organizations. They've been pushing, they've been fighting for reparations, at least at a time they were fighting for reparations. And of course, so what Pan-Africanism does, like I said, that's a Pan-Africanist group, but Pan-Africanism as a whole, what we're in our examination of it, it seems to run, just in its fundamental principles and ideology, seems to run counter to our very notion of delineation and being centered and anchored in America. And I don't think it was intentional, just like we don't think that the baby boomer generation and the silent generation who marched for civil rights, they didn't intentionally, if they had known what integration would do for us 50 years later, they may not have championed it as a sole cause, but maybe as a cure for the moment and evolved to something else. Pan-Africanism, we see Pan-Africanism a lot in that perspective because, you know, it's African-centered. It's centered. It pushes us, in my opinion, because, like I said, I embrace the principles of Pan-Africanism, you know, the universal, the global oneness. That would be a beautiful thing. However, what it does, because we are focused in this season, and I stress this season, we're focused in this season on a political interest of a group within the United States. And, of course, and we've got a beautiful history ourselves here. Our struggle is a beautiful struggle. I mean, the fact that we're still here after 500 years with everything that's been thrown, that's where they're celebrating. We don't need to suppress that or suborn that to a larger Africa. And that's the problem that many of us feel that Pan-Africanism intentionally done by focusing on other people. And, you know, we got a George Washington Carver. We don't really need to, in my opinion, I'm not that concerned about some guy 5,000 years ago from the Nile Valley. I've got a George Washington Carver. We got a Benjamin Banneker. I don't need to worry so much about who built that pyramid because we got builders, and many of them are from our very own bloodline and family. And that's worthy of celebrating. And not to say that those other Mansa Musa and all of them aren't worthy of celebrating either, but we are politically mature people now, and we understand that we can't live a Wakanda life. We've got a real, like I said, the racial wealth gap presents an existential threat to us as a people. And Pan-Africanism was created in the West by people in the United States and in the Caribbean.
Do you know why it was created?
Sure. Yeah, there was an Overton window. Even going back to the 1800s, but I know that in the 60s when a lot of these African nations were starting to gain their independence, there was a beautiful Overton window between that was emerging from blacks becoming, you know, gaining some rights through the civil rights movement and Africans gaining their independence. So the timing was beautiful, and Pan-Africanism was at its height then. But like I was saying, the perspective is that that the ideas kind of run somewhat counter to us anchoring, you know, our life in our fight and our struggle here in America, because we've been told that, you know, that, hey, you know, we need to abandon America. We need to center on Africa. You know, let's, you know, go back to Africa mentally, spiritually, and in some cases physically. America's not this. America's, and we acknowledge all of the evils of America, but we are here in the belly of the beast, and we made this country. Even though this country is powerful now, but the country got its economic might off of the work of our slave labor and our people who created some 50,000 to 60,000 patents and were never remunerated for. And so we built this America. You know, truth be told, we built this America. And of course, Pan-Africanism would be more effective if it was pan-continental first, because, I mean, Africa has 54, maybe if you count the Western Sahel, 55 countries. They're not united. And, of course, I mean, politically, economically, socially, in many ways. And so that's a heavy lift. And love to do it. And we think that once the group in America, once we get our, you know, once we're able to get some economic and political power, that we'll be more able to aid in that. But we come to the realization we can't suppress, because like I said, this is an existential threat. We got erasure and replacing kind of happening right before our eyes. It's projected that by 2053, if nothing is done to stop this to close this racial wealth gap, the average median household of Black Americans, you know, people descended from American slaves, is going to be zero. And then at that point in time, I mean, you've got no power. I mean, then they wipe you out, you know, when you get to that point. And it's been by the grace of God, you know.
Dr. Claude Anderson, you know, talks about that a lot. And I appreciate him, you know, informing us, you know, of the wealth gap and how it's expanding. But let me get back to the Pan-Africanism, because I think that a lot of people, and maybe even some of the members of ADOS, wasn't clear on its intent, is that the European has organized globally, not just in America. They organized globally and suppressed. They control the world. Would you deny that they control the world?
No, not at all. Yeah, they do.
All right, they control the world. All right. So if and their control of the world and their domination to extract resources, even though Africa has been colonized, decolonized, there's still an economic stranglehold on Africa. Even after 100 and maybe 50 years, it still has the richest, still mineral-wise, it's the richest continent, you know, on the face of the earth, at least based on recent data that I've seen, all right? And so I'm saying now, if the European use that to fuel this and sustain that, all right, it allows them to be able to dominate us here. It allows them to dominate Blacks in the Caribbean as well as to dominate the Blacks in Africa. So the Pan-African movement was fueled by European globalization. I mean, we didn't think of ourselves as being Pan-African. It's to unite. And it has nothing to do with us not struggling here. I mean, that's what we hear. I'm here. I've been to Africa, you know, a multitude of times, but my struggle is right here. So I think that there's I think that in my just listening to you, I think that there is a confusion that that Pan-Africanism is taking an emphasis, all right, off of the struggle that we have here. And on Africa, see, I don't mind. I can appreciate Carter G. Woodson. I can appreciate you know, all of the builders that we have here. But I got blood connection that also ties me to the African continent. I mean, I really appreciate the pyramids too, because see, nobody else, regardless of what we built here, nobody else has been able to build those things over there. The science, we have not yet understood the science.
Yeah.
So why should I cut myself off from the science? Because see, we still don't understand the science.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not negating the contributions have here. I mean, from what we have done here shows the ingenuity that we had that came through our ancestry there. Because, see, you call yourself, you say African. See, I don't look at myself as a descendant of slaves. I looked at myself as a descendant of someone who were forced to come here and enslaved. I'm not a slave.
Yeah. Well, the result was still the same, and we try not to get caught up in those people.
Well,
I don't want to get caught up in the words. The words have a meaning.
The words have meaning.
Yeah.
You know, when you say you're a slave, so you say, well, where's my what happened before? And if you say, well, what happened before? See, it's like the Islamic religion, which, you know, I used to be a member. Right? Islamic religion say, you know, after Muhammad, you know, there was nothing before. Well, that's idiotic. I mean, we all know there was something before, you know, Muhammad came on the scene. All right, now some of my friends are going to jump on me for saying that. But I'm saying we already knew that, you know, there was things that came before. All right?
Sure.
What was the significance of those things that came before? How did they, you know, your history leads to what's happening right now?
Right.
So I'm saying
that
is
not,
right.
Now, I'm just simply saying we're not denying it, but it's an urgency of the moment. Movement and conversation that we're having.
But you can't beat the U.S. You can't beat the U.S. if it's being fueled from external.
Well, but I don't. When you say the United States is the most powerful country in the world right now, and of course, why is it the most powerful country in the world? There's various reasons. It's military might and it's economic might and it's political might. And we know the origin of its economic might comes from our people, you know, that were slaves here in the United States. And like I said,
why don't we focus on the economics?
We're focused on the reparations. We're not really trying to, like I said, that's a larger fight, that, you know, of course, Africans, you know, of course, just like we fought here in the United States.
But it's a fight that's been brought to us, because, number one, COVID tells us that it's a fight that's been brought to us. They're able to indoctrinate and put a jab in everybody's attempt globally. And see, we are powerless to be able to do anything. I don't care whether you're black here or you're black on the continent. All right?
Right.
So that means then, as a consequence of our powerlessness, all right, this European, you know, can inoculate, can brainwash, can intimidate leaders, whether they're in Congress or they're heads of states on the African continent or the Caribbean. So I'm saying that what's the solution to being able to adequately address reparations, knowing that I am one-fifth of the collective white population here, all right, and have no control over the legislative process, the legal process, or the political process at this time?
It's a long, protracted fight, just like our fight from the beginning. There were people that thought that we would never – there were slaves who thought that they would never be free, and some of them indeed never lived to be free. But those that were fortunate enough to live past 1863 –
I just want the strategy.
Yeah. No.
Which should be our strategy.
Yeah. Yeah, read. Go back to the book. We got the strategy. The movement has a strategy. I didn't come here to really talk strategy. I just wanted to clear up the delineation piece. If you are really interested in the strategy, I would encourage you. I think you're not in Georgia. I don't know what state you're in. I know Brother Thurman is in.
I'm in Florida. Well, I'm on my way to Florida right now.
Okay, right. The ADOS movement, which includes the lineage, and then there's the official HQ group. They've got chapters in these various states in Florida. Definitely got chapters. Got a chapter in Georgia. Got some chapters up in the DMV area. The work is being done, and you can read from here to equality to kind of give you an idea of what the general approach is that we're taking versus what some other people have taken in the past.
Ulu is taking an approach. Ulu doesn't have reparation in it. We support reparation, but we don't have it in our plan because, see, right, we understand the global dynamics of the European mindset and his intent.
Yeah.
And so, our focus is to build an economic base, and we have a process how to build that economic base.
Well,
now, at the same time, in building that economic base, we're not necessarily trying to delineate because we see ourselves as getting the vital resources that is necessary to build
Let's not do apples and oranges. Let's not do apples and oranges. I can talk like I said, I'm a part of a co-op that's doing that work that Ulu is trying to do. We've been doing it for 55 years, and we've been doing it real well. I'm trying to stick to the political conversation here about the delineation. But I agree, that model, we push the cooperative economic model as well. And we push the traditional economic, the traditional cooperative economic model because it's worked well for us. And, of course, and we continue to push it and champion anybody who pushes the cooperative model. And even after we get out of reparations, we want to encourage people to push that cooperative model like Ulu's pushing and like my co-op, West Georgia Farmers Co-op, has done for 55 years. But as far as
we cannot proceed on the political model until we have solidified the economic model.
But see, what I'm hearing from you, in all due respect, it's the same. It may be a generational issue because it's the same kind of pushback and kind of that I hear from the
I'm looking at 40 million people. I'm looking at 40 million people versus 160 to 200 million that are solidified.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, but see, but then again, there's a heartbreak around embracing the people of your lineage, and like there's something wrong with being politically self-interested, and that's now a problem. You got to be politically self-interested when it's due season. Nobody can. We fought for everybody's causes as long as I can remember my entire life, whether it was LGBTQ, whether it was immigration as a whole.
I'm not fighting that cause.
Whoever.
I'm not fighting that cause.
Yeah, right. Right. We're not fighting that cause. What I'm simply saying is, as a people, we have. And now we have fought everybody's cause except ours. And so I'm just simply saying, like, the commonalities that I said that I was seeing is, like, even when we talked about voting down ballot and no black agenda, no vote, that really breaks the hearts of the church crowd because they believe in the Democratic Party and they still believe in this integration and that good white folks are going to do it for us. But they've shown they disrespected us time and time again by getting our vote and not delivering anything. And so I mean we've even got
I agree with you.
Yeah, we've even got Go ahead, Brother Sherman.
And I just want to tell the family, and if there's a family member had their hand up a minute ago but it disappeared, but if they're still back, raise your hand once again. You had a question or comment. And I also want to give thanks to the conversation that we've had so far because it's a very interesting conversation. And we had already agreed that the subject has got so many questions and things to get clarity on that this first time we're discussing this is not enough to go into further to get greater clarity. And once again, the caller that had the hand up, if you're still on the line, just raise your hand before we close out for the night. And family members, you can see that as we hold on just a minute, family, we got a caller with a question or comment, and we can recognize them. Yes, caller with the last four numbers, 7204. You got a question or comment? Please give us your brief question or comment.
Yes, good evening. This is Deborah calling. I just wanted to ask a question. Well, first I want to say instead of slave, I'd rather use enslaved, okay? But I wanted to ask him one question. Whose land is this? Whose land is this? And
All land is God's land, from my perspective. But of course,
okay, that's that's what I wanted because it seemed like you're separating our people. Okay.
Well, no,
I mean,
we're delineating.
For the same thing. I mean, you know, on my mother's side, my grandmother was a black Indian.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But see, for some reason to me, I consider myself indigenous.
All right.
Because all the land was connected to Africa. They call Africa the motherland for a reason. Because it's the mother. It's the only one that didn't move. Although others just kind of slid away in the water, okay? But as we slid away, it was Africans on each piece of land that slid away. So to me, it seemed like it's a division here. Maybe it's not hooking up in my head, okay? But it seems like it's a division somewhere. I mean,
delineation by its nature. Yeah, delineation by its nature is some separation is necessary sometimes, and so in separation and delineation is not always a bad thing.
Okay.
Sister, the hour is running out on us, and as I said a few minutes ago, and we always value your wisdom and your participation and you being a Lifting Us member. And we got to end the call tonight, and we had already agreed before that this conversation needs to be carried further to get that greater clarity in what you just asked and what.
Part two.
Yes, part two.
Part two.
We talked about it. Thank you. You got it, sister. Thank you so much for calling in, and family. We thank everybody. And Brother Lamar and Brother Shabaka. And all of the family, we thank you for being involved and based on one of the last things in response to Sister Deborah's questions, Brother Lamar, you know, talk about some division. Is that was necessary? Is that that's the way you said that?
Yeah. Just all depends on the context. You know, of course, all division ain't a bad thing. I definitely want to separate from white supremacy, so that division ain't a bad thing. And sometimes we have to cut people off in our lives that are toxic. So that's just life, you know.
Yeah, and so the reason I brought that up is that in that part two, whenever we can, you know, we need just as I said earlier in the call. That we're here to hear each other and to get clarity so that we can proceed in the most effective, most efficient way for our people. And it's on us. And we appreciate everybody, all of the family around the world that was listening in on the conversation, because there are a lot of people listening and they're not calling in because they were taking in and to get that clarity. And so once again, family, we're here every Thursday, and tonight's topic was Pan-Africanism in a Time of Delineation. And I thank you so much, Brother Lamar, for being on the call tonight. I thank you so much, Brother Shabaka, Sister Deborah, and all of the family members. And we will be back again next Thursday, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we are ending the call for tonight. And this is Brother Thurman with Us Lifting Us. And we've got to keep on moving forward and let there be no stopping us.
Peace. All right. Right. Thanks, brother. Thanks. Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
so many things that's held us down. But now it looks like things are finally coming around. I know we've got a long, long way to go. And where we'll end up, I don't know. But we won't let nothing hold us back. We're putting ourselves together. We're polishing up our act.